Welcome to the latest Serotalk Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of Serotech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deafblind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. And now, here's your host, Michael Loft. Welcome to Serotalk Tech Chat 68 for September 9, 2010. This is Michael Loft, along with my co-host, Mr. Joe Steinkamp.
Greetings, everyone.
And a topic that Joe is personally passionate about. And yes, we've been guilty of being a little iPhone-centric, but there is other options. And we really wanted to sit down and talk about the current accessibility and usability of the Android operating system created by Google. And there's a variety of phones, certainly on equal caliber number of actual phones out there in the mix. Many people preferring the Android choices. Being open source for developers and just a variety of applications, maybe a little stronger in the area of multitasking. But tonight we want to talk specifically about the accessibility and usability. What can we do? Where are some shortcomings right now that need to be improved upon? What are some accessible applications, maybe some particular phones to stay away from, as well as some particular phones that at least thus far have proven to be maybe a little more effective than others. So also joining us tonight is Chris Millsap. I want to thank you. You did a great podcast that folks can check out. I think you have that over at blindcooltech.com where you went into Android usability. Yes.
Blindcooltech.com, and they're also on the AI Squared Zoomed In blog.
All right. So. Very good. Well, I guess maybe the one of the first places to start here is specifically, you know, can I start using the built-in speech within Android, or do I need some sighted assistance to get the party started?
Chris, you want to go first?
Sure. Yes. That's a very simple question. Unfortunately, you do need sighted assistance to get things set up, but you should only need to do that once. You need a sighted person to go into the settings menu. There is under the settings menu, there is an accessibility menu. You turn on accessibility and turn on TalkBack. TalkBack is the screen reader under Android. There's also two other accessibility tools on the phone called SoundBack and Kickback. SoundBack will provide sound feedback, and Kickback will make the phone vibrate when you move around to different controls. The other two are kind of experimental, but TalkBack has been the focus of accessibility so far on Android, and that's the one you really are looking to turn on.
But not all Android phones have TalkBack built in, right? There's a certain prerequisite, right?
I would say about 98% of them do. You do need to have an Android 1.6 or greater phone. There are hardly any phones on the market anymore that have Android 1.5. So pretty much any Android phone that you would get now, or even a phone that's about a year old, is almost certainly going to be compatible with TalkBack.
Well, maybe we'll get a little more specific in the future, but I guess there are some phones that have kind of custom built-in applications. I know HTC and Motorola, some of their units, have these apps built in that aren't accessible. And so I guess some are curious if they can be made to be usable, or what does that entail? Is that in your area of expertise? Because actually one of our other guests that I hope to have this evening...
Well, I personally have never used a phone that has, like, say, the Sense UI from HTC or the new Moto Blur, which unfortunately is on the Droid X. So I'm not familiar with the add-ons, but my understanding is that some portions of this can be made accessible, and in some cases you can just remove the widgets that are a part of Sense or Blur from the device itself and then get closer and closer to stock Android. That's my understanding, though. I don't have first-hand experience.
Also, I've been told that you can actually go in and change the theme, and there's a theme setting which allows you to switch between different themes. And if you download the Eyes Free Shell, and we'll get into that in a bit, you can actually switch to that and let that be your default theme rather than rely on, say, the Moto Blur or the HT Sense navigation that comes on pre-installed on a lot of these phones that... you're going to see a rule of thumb is to look into the phone and see if it has just a vanilla or what is called just a plain normal version of Android. And the early Droid has that. The Droid 2 does not, like Chris was saying. And of course, I have the LG Ally, which one of the reasons why I chose it was because it didn't have any type of pre-customized blur or sense navigation on it.
Of course, and beyond the scope here, certainly some folks have even gone to extremes of putting a custom ROM on, which is not going to be doable by a blind person without sighted assistance. And you really have to know what you're doing, because certainly you could brick your phone. And then there's questions about would putting that new ROM on there actually void the warranty? And that may depend on the particular phone and carrier that you're working with. So we do have a link for one option in that arena where we don't have the expertise to really comment on that. But that's what some folks are doing to make sure that it works. But Chris, let's go back to some basic questions that you said you received after doing your initial podcast. One here is, can I actually send and receive texts on my Android phone?
Yes, you certainly can. The stock Android messaging app does allow you to send and receive text messages. So that's not really a problem. And that was a very common question. There have been problems, which we'll talk about later, with the email client being inaccessible due to the fact that it's based on the WebKit browser, which is also not accessible. But there have recently been some solutions developed on that front by the Ideal Corporation, which we'll talk about later also. But the short answer is, yes, you can use SMS text messaging on an Android phone with a stock Android text messaging client with TalkBack working and reading the messages to you.
Well, I don't. Should we maybe tackle that right now, Joe? Web sure. And email, I did actually put those in as questions later on. They seem appropriate here as we're talking about what can we do and where are the shortcomings right now. So let's talk about email and web browsing.
Yeah. Again, what Chris was talking about in having a physical keyboard will help you in a lot of ways. I'm not sure, Chris, did you disable the Android keyboard or do you use the touch keyboard in any way that's built into the phone?
Very occasionally, 99% of the time I use the physical keyboard.
Yeah, and I'm kind of the same way. I've worked with the Android keyboard, and I've tested it in just a very rudimentary fashion. I've not put a lot into it, but I was, to be honest and to be forthright, I'm more of a button person anyway, so getting used to a touch screen in any capacity is a little strange for me. And again, it was another reason why I looked at the Ally, because it has really distinctive keys in the center keys are, they kind of slope away so they're easy to find. And it also has a dedicated number row. So for typing in messages, that was one of the things that I looked at was to do just that. But to talk about what we were saying in the case of what is working with and what is not working with, in the state of email, one of the programs that I started playing with is one that Chris turned me onto in his wonderful podcast, and that is the email client from the Ideal Corporation. And in the if you go searching for it, if you look up Ideal and K9, you'll find the K9 email program. And you can use that to sync into your Gmail, which I've done, and you can read pretty fairly well through emails and respond back. Chris, how have you found that to be since you've done your podcast?
I've been using it quite a bit. If an email contains a lot of HTML markup, sometimes there will be, you know, reading of tags and things of that nature, which is something that they need to work on. It's definitely sort of has a beta feel as far as the reading goes right now, but it is definitely usable. And in the vast majority of cases, it does a pretty good job of reading email and allowing you to respond to email. So it certainly, in my opinion, solves the problem of email accessibility for the most part on Android.
Right. And you know, one of the things that we have to stress here is, like Chris had said in the beginning, a lot of this changes. And so because this is very early going for Android, remember that the phone hasn't even been talking a year yet. We'll cross that in October when 1.6 came out. We'll be, you know, talking again and maybe doing another podcast like this in a couple of months to talk about how radically it's changed. Because just in the month and a half I've been playing with Android, accessibility has changed pretty forward and pretty good for what it was when I first started. And using K9, like Chris said, was slow going for me at first. But once when I learned how to use the D-pad for a lot of things, and that's the directional pad that is on the phone that allows you to arrow up and down through your various menus. Once when you learn the navigation points on it, you can go pretty fast.
So what about web browsing? Where are we with that? If Safari is not fully usable, where are we with browsing the web? Chris, you want to start with that?
Okay. Yes. That is a very interesting point, especially with Joe's lead-in about how fast things are changing. web browsing on Android at first was just not accessible because the WebKit browser that is built into Android does not have any accessibility hooks natively. But Ideal, which is the same group that put out the Ideal Canine application, had put out some very limited web browsing support about a month ago that was very cumbersome to set up and involved the installation of multiple apps and doing a lot of configuration and so forth. It was kind of a difficult thing to get up and running, and even when you did, it wasn't all that great. Has just come out in the last week with version 2.0 of their browser, which has a built-in reading application. And it's very simple and straightforward to get set up and running. This is called, if you want to look in the market, Ideal Web Access. So if you just search for Ideal Web, you'll get it. And I've only had it less than 24 hours, but I've got to say I'm very impressed with it so far.
So this is recent development on enhancements in web browsing. And so it's important to mention there, this is not for the faint of heart. This is for people on the cutting edge that want to be out there and push the envelope. This is not for someone who wants to just get something that come in it from an iPhone standpoint, ready to go, ready to rock and roll, set it and forget it. You have
this
to be a little bit...
It's
geeks and geeking and tweaking at this point.
Agreed. If you're on Verizon and you're concerned that you won't have a Windows mobile phone or another option to be able to use some of the other options that have been made available between Nuance and Code Factory, and I'm a Verizon customer, I looked at Android as a way to have at least something that was accessible. And for someone to do very basic features of the phone, you're looking at the eyes-free shell. And what we're talking about with that is it's another program that you can download into the phone, and it is an overlay that sits on the phone and allows you to do simple navigation, where if you put your finger in the middle of the phone, it considers that like the number 5 key, and you can assign different actions to the other keys. So if I put my finger in the middle and move it to the top left, I've set my number 1 as my voicemail and my number 2 as contacts. And my number 3 is battery status. So if I put my finger in the center and move it off to the top right of the screen, no matter how far I move, the phone detects that I've moved it to the top right and will give me my battery status. So if you're looking for simplicity, the eyes-free shell can help you with that. You can customize it. You can have certain things come to the front, or you can allow the programs that you use most to be up there, kind of in the same way that you do with Apple folders. And you can get to that kind of information really quickly and really fast. And remember that you have dedicated buttons on Android phones. So you have a home menu, you have a menu button, you have talk, and you have end call. And holding those for short presses and long presses can also get you to menus within eyes-free shell and other places. So from the very simple standpoint, when I was first using the phone, I relied on eyes-free shell just to kind of sort of get me through until I was ready to venture out into the deep end of the pool. So again, I'm not going to say that it's real easy. And you're right, Michael, if it's somebody from the iPhone perspective, they would find this very frustrating, and that it is Wild Wild West at the moment. While the frontier is going to be tamed, it's going to take a little bit of time. So unless you're really, really, really interested in starting off at the very beginning of accessibility on this platform, yeah, you might want to hold on just a little bit into Windows Mobile or whatever you're already using.
Now, some of the questions I see here suggest to me that maybe many people are coming in from the Nokia front, but I'm curious, we'll ask some of these here. One is, how do I copy music and movies to an Android phone? Chris, do you want to address that?
Yeah. It's actually very simple. When you connect an Android phone to your PC with the USB cable that comes with the phone, it appears as just any other USB drive. So the SD card or whatever memory you have in the phone appears as just a standard drive. So you can simply drop your music or movies onto basically in the root or wherever you want to put them on the phone, if they're in the right formats, like MP3, and there's several video formats and so forth. And the music playback application or the movie playback application will find them and get all the information and so forth about the artist and so forth, and take care of everything for you. In a similar vein, if you want to use an MP3 as a ringtone on an Android phone, you can actually just mount it as a drive to your PC by hooking it up to the USB port. Make a directory on the on the phone called ringtones, lowercase, all lowercase ringtones, one word, and then drop in MP3s that you want to use as ringtones, and the phone will take care of the rest as far as clipping them and so forth. You know, if you don't, it'll clip the first, I'd say, 30 seconds or so of the MP3 and just use it as a ringtone.
What about other types of multimedia, like we have radio enthusiasts want to know if there are any apps to listen to streaming radio stations or maybe podcasts or either watching YouTube, anything else in the multimedia real-time streaming environment?
There are several. The accessibility is not 100% on a lot of them, but I do think they're usable. There's an app called Podcast, P-O-D-K-A-S-T, if you're searching for it in the market. That is fairly accessible, and with the addition of some of the new features that came out in TalkBack today, is fully usable. That should allow you to search for popular podcasts, subscribe to them, play them, save them out as MP3s, do pretty much anything you would want to do with podcasts. Unfortunately, one of the drawbacks of this program right now is that you can't point it to specific URLs. It has it's programmed to look in certain locations for podcasts, and if you're not there, then it doesn't find it. That is right now, though, the best podcast player on Android. As far as streaming radio, there's another app called Xia Live, and that is X-I-I-A-L-I-V-E. And it's also fairly accessible, and it will allow you to play from URL-based sources, streams. But yet again, there are a couple of buttons in the app that aren't labeled, and so you have to remember the position of, for example, the stop button. But you can fairly easily figure that out.
And then what about the video? Oh, go ahead, Joe.
And let me say also, most of those buttons are locked in with the kickback and the haptic control, which makes life a lot easier, that you get an idea of where the button is when you touch it, because the phone vibrates. And for me, that was a big part of Android that I like, because sometimes I'm not always sure where that is, but I've begun to really learn memorization of where I am on the phone and get that vibration to let me know that I've hit the target.
And another thing, today the TalkBack screen reader was updated, and one of the things that was fixed in the screen reader is now that when you land on an image button that isn't labeled, which unfortunately quite a few apps have buttons that aren't labeled with what amounts to an alt tag, at least previously it wouldn't say anything, but with the new version it will at least say image button, and that lets you know that at least you're on a button, and you can use that as a memory.
Right, so we will get some updates there. Sure, you'll probably follow up either with a podcast or something as this technology's evolved. The final thing in the multimedia would be the video front, things like Netflix or Hulu or YouTube, anything in that space that's accessible.
YouTube is on the phone. I'm not 100% sure about the accessibility, though I think it is fairly accessible as far as searching and so forth. As far as Hulu and Netflix and everything, Flash is available on Android as of last weekend on the Droid and so forth. However, it appears that Hulu is blocking Android devices right now, as they are in a lot of other places, I think, with a lot of other phones.
Interesting. Interesting that they're blocking
Netflix,
it.
I'm not sure about the Netflix app.
Yeah, I think they're coming out with one, or may have already released it. We just don't know about the accessibility, but even the iPhone one was beta, but I thought I saw Android up there, so we'll be curious to play with that and see if that's going to be functional for us. Joe, you mentioned earlier.
And some phones have actually, Android phones have come with avatar and stuff on them, so I mean, some of these phones are coming with multimedia already built into them. And Chris, you've used the media player a little bit built into Android, and you found fairly good work with it, right?
Yes, I have. Right. In fact, my original podcast, I showed all of the music controls and all of that as far as music playback and video playback seems to be fairly similar.
Okay, so how Joe, you briefly mentioned this about the importance of having a keypad. How important is that? I mean, is it really necessary to keep your bearings, or would you stay away from any phone that doesn't have that?
I really stress that having a keypad on a Android phone is really kind of paramount. To be able to do some of the navigation and to we've talked about having to memorize buttons on the screen. There is a little bit of that at the moment. That's changing in each update. But to be able to accurately hit certain things, you can somewhat do that a little faster with the navigational pad on the phone. You also, in my case, I do a lot of number entry, and I find that I can do that a little easier with a dedicated number row that's on my Ally. And it was one of the reasons why I felt jealous about the Droid 2 at first, because I wanted the speed boost of the ship, but I really didn't want to give up the actual physical keypad. The Droid 2 has that, but it doesn't have the dedicated number row. And it actually changed the navigational pad into arrows rather than kind of a pad, almost a video game-like pad that's on the Ally or the original Droid. And so having that keypad can help you, because you can first letter navigate, which is really nice. So if you want to get to a Seismic or something like that, or Facebook, you can hit those keys and jump right to it. And if you start downloading a lot of apps, that's really fun to be able to just first letter navigate to what you're looking for.
And what about other screen reading options? I just brought up this spiel on the screen. Have either you played with that, or is that something you use in conjunction with, or is it an and or either or issue with TalkBack?
I have not used spiel.
Okay, Chris?
It once. It wasn't quite where TalkBack was, and that was several months ago. So I haven't had any experience with it since then. I believe that it's just another option in the accessibility menu, so you can use either or, but you probably don't want to use both at the same time. Both are being actively developed. I think TalkBack is still sort of ahead, though, because, you know, TalkBack is Google's official network.
And then what is the third option? Is that the Eyes-Free Shell, or is it, what is the third option for accessibility?
The Eyes-Free Shell is actually a part of the Eyes-Free project, which is Google's accessibility project. TalkBack is sort of a part of that, but the Eyes-Free Shell is a component that replaces the standard Android launcher. So TalkBack is used to read, you know, like any screen reader, whatever goes on the screen. And the Eyes-Free Shell is used to navigate around the phone and do the kind of things that Joe was describing earlier.
And there's another program, Stitchin, or what's the one that was recommended on the Eyes-Free blog that actually gives you also secondary information, because what's different with Android is that you can run two-screen readers in a way that complement each other. And we have a link in the show notes to the Eyes-Free blog, and you can get to that because a description given by Mr. Rahman explains how you can actually have TalkBack and the secondary program going to give you some more information. I've not done that yet because I wanted to use the programs natively and get to know them a little better first before I started experimenting. But Code Factory has also announced that they're going to come out with a program for Android. So there's going to be some other options coming in a couple of months.
Let's look at some of the accessible apps, or at least partially accessible apps. One of the big ones that almost everybody's using these days is Skype. So have either you played with this Skype Mobile for Android?
Yes, I have, and I've got to say that I haven't found anything yet that's not accessible. So it actually is pretty good. One of the things that's sort of a negative for me, and this has nothing to do with accessibility, is that on Verizon, the Skype Android app requires that the Skype call go over 3G. In fact, it was so aggressive about that previously to about maybe a week ago, it would actually turn the Wi-Fi off on the phone.
Wow.
Now, there was an update about a week ago that allows the Wi-Fi to stay on, but you still have to do the Skype call over 3G. So I don't really understand that. I guess they want to make sure that they get their data minutes, because I think that they're thinking about going to a tiered pricing plan for data at some point. But it does require you to go over 3G. But as far as accessibility is concerned, I've made several calls with Skype on Android, and I've sent messages and so forth, and everything seems to be accessible.
And the quality is pretty good, sound quality?
Oh, it's reasonable.
And am I correct in assuming that, like iPhone, there's no video, it's just audio at this point?
Yes.
Okay. Well, let's talk about social networking, and you mentioned earlier Seismic. For Twitter?
Yeah.
Seismic, go ahead, Chris.
Seismic is the most accessible of the Twitter clients. I was kind of surprised that Twitter's native Twitter client for Android was not all that accessible. But Seismic actually seems to work pretty well. I mean, I can't think of anything off the top of my head that it can't do accessibly. Joe, is that your experience? I know you started using it after I passed it along.
I did. After I heard you demonstrate it on your podcast, I went and grabbed it, and you know, I was always goofing on people that were staring at their phones in restaurants and the like, and darned if I didn't become one of those persons who now looks at retweets and email and, I mean, excuse me, at the direct message. And you can even arrow up and arrow left and right, which was really great if I didn't, again, if I'm eating, I don't necessarily want to put a messy finger on my screen. So it was, I found it to be very helpful. Depending on my signal, you know, there's a little bit of a lag. It took me a second to hear something, or it would pause while it was waiting to load the audio to read it. But once when I got used to the timing and how it read, I found it to be very accessible and simple to use, which is really something you don't see in some mobile apps these days.
Okay, and then what about the Facebook app?
The Facebook app is fairly accessible. There's been a change in the last 24 hours, believe it or not. I mean, things just keep changing on Android. There were some sections in the Facebook app where you had to memorize buttons and memorize, you know, to click on the news feed, you had to go to the top left corner and click on that. Remember that was the first button in the list. With the release of the new version of TalkBack, there is special code in TalkBack for Facebook. So the Facebook app, I have only been able to play with it for about 10 minutes or so, but it does seem like it's much more accessible than it used to be. And in any event, once you got to the news feed, it worked pretty well.
Okay. Agreed. Just arrowing down will get you into that, so you can hear who it's from. And if you sit there, it'll read the entire post by that person. It was at first daunting, like Chris was saying. You get a screen with, in my case, like six icons, because I have a couple of additions into Facebook. And you get nothing in speech. So you assume, okay, if I hit the top left, this will put me into my newsfeed. And once when you learned that, it wasn't so bad. But now I'm eager, because I hadn't gone in there since Chris just said this update. So now I have to go play. This stuff is changing really fast. So when you're going to hear this podcast, you may want to read on a couple of the blogs that we have listed in the show notes, like the one from Android Anna with Accessible Android, and of course the Eyes Free Shell blog, because like Chris and I were talking about earlier, they've done an update just today as we're doing this podcast. So it is a just like in the iTunes world, they do updates. The same thing is happening on mobiles on the Android space. So in that situation, they're both very much alike.
So definitely by the end of 2010, almost a lot of stuff that we talk about here could be outdated information, because it is changing so rapidly. So we hope that you'll use the show notes that we also will have linked to at serotalk.com and, of course, embedded into Accessible Event. Joe, you made a good point. You know, when we use these touchscreen phones, there's just times you don't want to touch the phone. You're eating spaghetti or whatever. What about voice navigation? What are we able to do on that front? Chris, I'll start with you, Chris.
Well, Android allows for voice entry of anytime you have a text edit field, you can do voice entry on Android. Now, there has been a little bit of a problem with that with regard to accessibility, because the voice entry message box will pop up, and then it'll hear the screen reader read the message box, and you will get garbled text because it's trying to figure out what the screen reader said as well as what you said. However, you can use in TalkBack, if you know that you're about to have a voice dialogue pop up that you want to dictate something to, you can put your finger where the proximity sensor is, and TalkBack will not speak as long as your finger is there. The proximity sensor is usually in the top left part of the screen of the phone, the very top left part. It's kind of where your phone would touch your ear if you're making a call. And it's used to turn the screen of the phone off when someone is making a call and their phone is in contact with them. But the author of TalkBack co-opted that sensor to use it as a way to turn speech off temporarily.
And also remember that you have the same thing like what people have with the iPhone, where you have the media volume and you have the ringer volume, and those are independent of each other. And TalkBack is in the media volume. So you can raise or lower the volume of that only when it's talking. So you can, that's how I kind of did it. I didn't think about the proximity sensor because I was playing with the volume, and I think I'll do the proximity sensor method from now on. But you can adjust that on the fly too, and that helps a lot in being able to separate that.
Have we broken any ground in terms of optical character recognition?
My phone has, I believe it's a 3.5 megapixel camera. So I do have a light on the phone and the flash, but I'm not sure it's going to be as good at OCR. And so I've not really looked at barcode scanners or any of that kind of stuff yet, because that's another one of those Droid 2 moments where that's a much higher megapixel. I believe it's 5 or higher. That made me go, maybe I need that phone for this. But again, the physical keyboard went out, so I'm kind of happy where I am with it. You have any luck with this, Chris?
I've used the barcode scanner. I've also used a Google Shopper. Unfortunately, these apps are not accessible enough for me to recommend to a blind or visually impaired audience right now, which is really a shame because they would come in incredibly handy. As on the Droid, Google Shopper will not only scan barcodes, but you can point it at a book and it will give you the information about that book by scanning the book's cover without a barcode, by looking at the image. So, you know, that these are apps, the Google barcode scanner as well as Google Shopper, that once we get a pretty reasonable community of visually impaired people on Android, we should start advocating that these are made more accessible.
Well, I was going to get to that, but before we go there, another one that's not ready for prime time, but probably time to start advocating, is the new app from Audible. You said it let you down a little bit.
Yeah, that's kind of unfortunate. The playback controls don't seem to be accessible. A lot of the other aspects of the app are, but the, you know, that's kind of the meat of the app, and it's not accessible. And TalkBack doesn't even recognize those as buttons, so I really don't know what's going on there, but it's very disappointing.
Have you done it's any? A shame. Go ahead, Joe.
It's a shame because some people tell me that the Audible app on Android is better than the one on iPhone. And again, I think Chris is right. We have to advocate and bring this to the attention, just like we did with other applications. And the more people that use this platform, I think will help in that area.
Have either of you specifically advocated, written to an author of a particular app to express concerns about accessibility? I'll start with you, Chris.
I haven't yet, but I was going to begin that. I've been more, honestly, trying to keep up with the changes in the platform, which has been changing so incredibly fast. Most of what I said in my original podcast is obsolete now. I mean, you could learn how to use Seismic or whatever from that podcast and learn how to use the music app. But we now have accessible email and accessible browsing on Android, which were my two big complaints in that podcast. So, and the market, the problems with the Android market, we have lost the main problem that I mentioned in that podcast, but now we have a different problem. So things are changing so quickly on this platform that I haven't even gotten to advocacy with developers yet, but I think that that is the next step.
Okay, the final app
and,
I have.
And part of that also is, I want to step in here, is that, you know, this is an open platform. And with Apple, there are rules about when you're updating, when you need to update, how you can update. With Android, you know, everybody can kind of have a little bit more freedom to do what they need to do in order to make that app work. And that's one of the reasons why it's so developer friendly. So like Chris was saying, once when I sit down to think, okay, this is what it's doing today, like in the case of the Facebook application that Chris mentioned earlier, I wasn't in there today. So there's been an update. So, you know, something I would have written, you know, has been addressed. So it really does change rather rapidly.
The final app I want to mention here that you had mentioned or someone had was Heytel. Chris, why don't you talk about what that does, what that adds to the Android mix?
I haven't had a chance to play with that, actually.
Okay.
Heytel is, my understanding is it's a push-to-talk app for Android and iPhone. Do you know anything about that, Joe?
No, I recently I tweeted out that they had an update for Android, and I've had a couple of requests to play with it. I had not had the opportunity to do so, but I've been reading it elsewhere that people have had fairly decent experiences with it. So it's one of those that I need to get to. But again, I used to joke about people and their flashlight apps on iPhone, and now I'm becoming one of those in Android. There's just so many out there to try and play with. And you have Froyo, don't you? You're 2.2 and I'm still 2.1.
Yes, and Froyo is so much better.
See, I'm so jealous.
Yeah, the thing about Froyo that's so much better is that in previous versions of Android, you had what amounted to a Java virtual machine, so your code was being interpreted as it was being run. In Froyo, there is a just-in-time compiler, so the apps just fly. They used to be fairly slow, but now I would say they're 2 to 3 times faster.
And you can also run off your memory card instead of the phone's memory. So let me back up. We didn't really cover this at the beginning. There are different versions of Android. We mentioned 1.6 earlier. There are versions that change the way that the phone behaves, the same way as with the iPhone with iOS. But in Android, the changes can be very dramatic. So in the case of 2.1, which is the phone system that the operating system I'm running on my phone, I can't do some of the things that Chris just outlined in what's called Froyo, which is version 2.2. Your phone's are not, it's kind of weird how this works. Android, Google tries very hard to get the phone carriers to push that update, but there are a lot of things that are involved on whether you're going to get that update. One is your carrier, the other is the phone manufacturer, and that forms a point of fragmentation within the operating system. So right now, Chris is enjoying some things I'm very jealous about because he's on 2.2 because his phone was able to go there first. The LG Ally is going to go to 2.2. They announced it in June that it was coming, but I have to wait. And part of that is because Verizon doesn't want some features enabled. One of those would be tethering, and Verizon would like to charge for that, whereas on some carriers, if you're running 2.2, tethering is free. So there's some other geeky parts of this that are we didn't cover at the early part of the podcast, but it's something that you will also run into when you're doing your research on Android on what the phone can and cannot do. And sometimes that's by carrier.
One final question here I have before we open up for questions from the attendees. I'm a backup fanatic, and if one thing is going to make me really seriously go over and look at Android, it's going to be the ability to back up my phone, to make an image of it so that if things go awry, I install a bad app or something along the way or lose speech, that I can kind of roll it back to a date and time when all is good, just as I do in Windows. Is that possible, Chris, and what tools are there to accomplish that?
There are several tools in the Android market that will do that. One of the better ones is called Wave Secure. That not only provides backup, but also security, and I believe it is fairly accessible. However, one thing that's very interesting about Android is that your contacts, your email, all of that stuff goes into the Google Cloud. So if you have your contacts in an Android phone, it's automatically in your Gmail account. And if you've got another Android phone and synced up with that account, all of that stuff comes back. In addition to that, every app that you bought in the Android market, Google keeps a list of. So if you lost your phone or whatever, you can just use that list to go and download all those apps again. Now, as far as your settings and so forth for individual apps or whatever, that would be saved by something like a Wave Secure or custom app from the Android market. But the vast majority of the stuff on the phone is saved for you in the Google Cloud.
So how much data is kept on the SIM if you happen to go with the GSM technology?
I don't have a GSM Android phone, so I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, that makes two of us. We're Verizon, so we're CDMA. What I understand is that from people who are using it on T-Mobile, say like the Nexus or something like that, that stuff is, you know, not heavy data intensive. However, you know, just like any mobile app, it depends on what settings and what you have enabled and if you're doing a lot of downloading, you know, Dropbox or what have you. So you could take up your memory fairly decently depending on what you're running. And Froyo helps that. The 2.2 helps that because it moves those apps over to the memory card.
And you have like a SDHC. Do some have an external, you know, can you plug in a card and back up data to that as well?
Yeah, I have the Droid has a micro SD card. It has a 16 gig card, and that's what I'm using for my storage on the phone.
Agreed.
Okay, well, we're going to enable questions so we can hear from the masses here. And while folks pose their questions, we prefer text questions only because our guests can't hear the voice ones. But coming up on the 16th, we're going to address handheld magnifiers, and our first round of that is going to be speak with representatives of various companies, and then maybe a few months down the road, do one actually with independent users who have had the good fortune to try a variety of different technologies. On the 23rd, we're going to do our career-focused segment, as Joe will be in Houston, I'll be in Indianapolis. But we're going to talk about radio broadcasting, find some folks who are actually working today in that with all the voice tracking and the importance today of understanding social networking and how radio and the broadcast industry is finally caught up, catching up, I should say, with that. Then on the 30th of the month, we're planning our, what we're going to do, as long as it's popular, is kind of this month in Access, and that way we can talk about some of the big news events, not only Access technology, but also general mainstream technology that will be important for all of us to know. And now we have our first question. Ricky Inger asks, regarding updates, how seamless is the update process, in particular a screen reader or eyes-free shell? Chris?
Basically, you go to the Android market to look for updates, like you go to the App Store on the iPhone. And you get a list of updates. I believe the list is accessible. And there's a button. On Froyo, there's a button that will update everything, all of the apps that need updating. On earlier versions of Android, you have to update apps one by one.
Uh-huh. This is true.
So a couple of follow-ups there are, A, is there a push notification for an app to tell you that there's a newer update available? And B, do you update that through the phone, or do you find you're connecting it to a computer to accomplish that, or do you have the choice? Or
You update through the Android market, and the phone updates over the air, but you have to go and sort of look for updates, very similar to the way that you do it on the iPhone by going to the App Store.
But, I mean, it's not like when you say the iPhone, there's usually an icon that says 6 updates available or something, so that you
Exactly. Okay. I don't think that there is that on Android. You have to go to the market and look for updates.
Okay, very good.
If you're using eyes-free shell, it will tell you that updates are available from the status bar. It doesn't necessarily tell you what those updates are, but you at least know that there is something that needs to be updated. And so that's how I had a clue that I needed to go look for updates was the phone would tell me updates are available. And I would, of course, turn back to the phone and go, exactly what is available? And so I had to go do a little research. But you can put your finger on the status bar, which is generally when the phone is in portrait mode up at the top. Generally, you can put your finger on the top of the screen. In eyes-free shell, it'll say status bar. If you pull that down, it will actually lengthen the bar and give you an idea of what's there. It sometimes is spoken, sometimes not spoken, depending on the apps. Like seismic updates, it didn't say, but in some others, I did get it to tell me what needed to be updated.
Okay, another question here. This one from Matt. Do you know of any accessible voiceover IP apps for connecting to Asterisk or Asterisk PBX or a SIP? Chris, do you know about the voiceover IP space?
Other than, I guess you could say that, well, Skype isn't quite what you're looking for, but I'm not sure of any others, to be honest with you, that are just straight voiceover.
Right. I think he's talking about ones that you could connect to your employer's VoIP, and that way when you're traveling, your calls could be, you know, you could answer them on your Android phone, just as if you were there. There's a, you know, a few options in the iPhone space, like WePhone or Media 5 phone or things of that sort. So that's something good to research there. And of course, if you're listening to this podcast, you can always send an email to resources@serotalk.com if any of you have delved into the world of VoIP on the Android operating system. Next question here. Question from JJ. blindbargains.com, and he wants to know, great discussion. I just ordered my first Android phone an hour ago. Curious about the accessibility of the Google Goggles app. And since you mentioned it, does the Android Dropbox app work? That's a good one. Dropbox, everybody loves their Dropbox.
I believe the Dropbox app does work.
That's what I've heard as well.
Yeah. Google Goggles would be great if it was accessible, but unfortunately, my tests were pretty disappointing right now.
Yeah, my wife loves it. Again, that's why sometimes my phone gets messed up, because others want to play with it. But I found the same thing, because you can get an idea, visually you can get an idea that something is going on, but nothing is speaking if you're running your finger around.
Okay, next question here from Kenny N. What are all the different voices for TalkBack? That's a good question. What are your choices for voices, Chris?
You got one.
That's sexy Samantha or what? No.
You've got two. You've got two, because you're 2.2. 2.2, you can also use Loquendo.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Mm.
Yeah, that's from the Eyes Free Shell blog. So Chris is correct. At 2.1, you have one. But Chris, being at 2.2, he actually has more options and it became available. And this, again, just happened recently where you could use the Loquendo voices with Android as long as you're using Froyo 2.2.
Question. Okay. Mike Arrigo asks two questions. Are there any unlocked GSM Android phones that way you're not subjected to what the carrier thinks you should and shouldn't have? And his other question the new Google Maps turn-by-turn navigation, is that accessible?
As far as the first one, there is an unlocked GSM phone. It's called the Nexus One. That was Google's original phone. They're not making them anymore, but you can probably find one. They're not cheap. They're about $500. But that's the only one that I'm aware of personally. As far as the turn-by-turn directions, I think it is accessible to a degree. Obviously, the maps are not, but once you get it speaking, you should not have any problems. And I think the controls for everything are accessible.
Yeah, I believe that's correct. And the Nexus One doesn't have a physical keypad, so
that's another problem with the Nexus One. That's something
right. And because of end of life on that, there's rumors going around that there's a replacement to the Nexus One coming. But I haven't seen much more than anything of rumors. There are some unlocked phones, but again, you're back to looking to make sure it has a keyboard, looking to make sure that it's within your price range, and again, you're also a situation where is that phone kind of older and can't move to the later versions of Android. So there's a little bit of research that you have to do to be able to go into choosing a phone like that.
Okay. Someone just asked if there's a Skype app available and is it accessible? We addressed that earlier, and there is a link on the notes there for Skype. And as Chris has stated, it is pretty much for the most part accessible. So I think I can safely answer that one, that it is a definite yes.
With caveats?
With a few caveats, as all these apps do. But let's see, JJ Blind Bargains throws up another amazed by all the rapid change. Just saw a message about Spiel getting a major facelift, and he's working with Dean Blasey's coupon, an Android-based note taker, and also talking about asking if anyone has tried the Foursquared app. Either of you guys play with that?
I have not. You, Chris?
No, I personally stay kind of away from Foursquare.
Yeah, you don't have the right mix here. I guess we'd had all of our participants tonight. Maybe we could address that. But
in Austin, I would have a lot of places to hit. But to drop back to the Braille, yes, Dean Blasey is really working on that. I've seen a couple of tweets go by about Braille for Android, and that is definitely something we'll want to address in a future podcast as a follow-up to this, because there does seem to be some movement in the Braille display area, which I'm excited about. That is great news. And I also haven't used any devices. Have you paired anything with yours? My phone is too new. I haven't broken it in yet, but have you paired a Bluetooth or anything with your phone yet, Chris?
I've paired a headset with it.
Okay.
And it works reasonably well.
Okay. Another great question here I have from Jeff Bishop asking, is it true that gestures are different per application, no standard UI? Chris?
Well, for example, the new web reader that I just mentioned that the Ideal Group came out with like in the last couple of days does have a set of gestures that are sort of non-standard. But most Android apps that are accessible, with the exception of that one and the Ice Free Shell, use the D-pad to get around in. So gestures really don't play that much of a part.
So you program, you map things to the keypad, gestures or functions you particularly want to use, right?
In the case of the Ice Free Shell, you can set, like say if you move your finger from the home key to the one key or whatever, you can set what that does, I believe.
Right, you can program all of that.
Yeah, that's a special case. In most Android apps, what you do is you use the D-pad to navigate around the screen.
Another good question here from Tom Schill. What about Braille support?
Right, like we were saying a moment ago, we're reading that Mr. Blasey has something in the works and is working towards his open source project, and part of that is to provide Braille to the Android platform. I don't know much more than it's in the process, and I haven't seen much more than that. I also haven't talked to any display manufacturers who've looked into this as of yet, because it seems that doing things with Apple and all the strides they had gone in this area have been very popular. So I think we'll see it. It's just a matter of letting the ecosystem settle down a bit and some standardization come across. Jeff's question was very apt. Because there is a little bit of, because this is open source, people rushing to be first, and no one has established a paradigm that everybody's going to follow yet. At some point, I think that'll work its way out. But for the moment, we have to let the dust settle. Like we were saying, Android's all about change at the moment.
So you just don't have any standards as far as gestures. You don't have the single, double, triple tap flicking gestures.
It doesn't work right now.
Right. It's all this keypad simulation of putting your finger in what would be the center of marking the five and then navigating out from there, right? Kind of the tic-tac-toe board in a way.
Well, that is the one ice-free shell app. In most, like say if you're using Seismic or whatever, you use the D-pad to navigate focus around the screen.
Right. And if you're visual and you're using some of the low vision portions of this to like pinch and zoom or to make things a little larger on the screen, those are pretty universal. Again, it kind of matters on what version of the operating system you're on, too, because some of that came later in later versions of Android. So some things like pinching and zooming are standard app to app. But what Jeff was getting at is that there might be these two keys to do one function here, but in another app that's very similar, those two finger taps could mean something completely different.
Kenny N asks if Serotech is looking to make a system access screen reader for Android, and I would say probably just like the iPhone, we would be more interested in SAM.net, particularly bringing the content and movies and things over with screen reading technologies already being built in. But as always the case with Serotech, you never know. You just never know. Uh-huh. Well, we're down to 3 minutes. I want to see if you guys have final comments, either address anything that we didn't or just some caveats, things you want new users coming into to take the plunge and get an Android phone. I'll start with you, Chris.
Well, I would just like to say that so far I've been really pleased having the Motorola Droid and watching the platform become more mature with regard to accessibility. And we all know what a wonderful job Apple has done with accessibility, and they just really have to be commended for that. However, I do feel strongly that it's important for blind and visually impaired people to have a choice and not to put all their eggs in one basket, because you don't know in the future whether Apple will have as much commitment to accessibility as they have today. They probably will, but you can't know that for 100%. So for those who would like a choice, Android is worth looking at if you are a fairly technically sophisticated user and are comfortable being an early adopter.
Joe, your thoughts?
I have to ditto what he said in droves. It is absolutely amazing what Apple has done to change the way that we are looking at mobile devices. And if somebody was on AT&T and they were looking for a new phone, I would not dissuade them from looking at the iOS platform or at least playing with a touch or an iPad. I think that's really, really important. But also, a lot what Chris was saying was important as well, because the Android marketplace is growing by leaps and bounds, and it is truly getting larger and larger. We cannot ignore that we need accessibility on this larger platform. And so it's one of the reasons why I bought a phone. As I've said in our previous podcast, you can't complain about lima beans unless you've eaten a bowl of them. And so far, I have to admit, I may not like lima beans in real life, but virtually, I tend to like the Android phone and don't regret that I don't have an iPhone, because one, I'm Verizon, but two, as I've used this more and more, I've gotten more adapted to it, and I don't mind it as much. Chris, we kind of went over quickly. Mention your blog and your alter ego, what you're doing in real life. We want to make sure we get your plug in here.
Oh, well, I happen to work for AI Squared, the makers of Zoom Text, the most full-featured screen magnification product for the PC. We've just started a blog called the Zoomed In blog, which covers low vision issues mainly, at www.aisquared.com/blog. And you should go by and check us out. My Android podcast is there. there, as well as some things about the iPhone, and all kinds of things are there.
And I want to thank you, because your podcast helped me a great deal. They certainly helped in the planning of this show, and I want to thank you for coming on board, because I really, when I first got this phone, I didn't have a lot of resources at first, and your podcast was one of the first places I was able to go, oh, that's what that means. Good. You know, so it helped me a great deal.
Yeah, I want to thank. Go ahead, Chris. You got a final thought?
Oh, well, I was just going to say anytime, guys. I really enjoyed talking about Android.
Well, yeah, why don't we plan to come back in a few months, because it is changing so rapidly and so dynamically, and we'll figure out the Skype demons and get a few other folks so that it's not solely on your shoulders there. But I thank both Chris and Joe, both your experience and expertise in this subject. No one has all the answers, but we hope that our information has at least given you a really good overview of where things are and some promise of where things are going. I agree with both of you. We need to promote and advocate and make Android as accessible as possible. We need choices. Not everyone lives where AT&T is an option. People want more affordable options. You know, so whatever the reason may be, if we can really harness and get Android ultimately where it needs to be in terms of accessibility, it's going to be a great day when the top two phone operating systems are both accessible and we are not paying one dime extra. This is going to be a great day, and I appreciate all of the useful information you provided. I have much more promise in it now than I honestly can say that I've had in the past, and we will certainly do follow-ups to keep you up on the latest developments where Android is concerned. Join us next week. We're going to talk about handheld magnifiers on the 23rd Career Focus, and on the 30th, what's new in access and mainstream technology, especially the latest developments in the last month.
This concludes another Serotalk Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of Serotech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deafblind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. Until we meet again, stay connected and stay directed.